It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome on in. It's KSL's Unrivaled. I'm Alex Keery. He is Scott Mitchell. Thanks for hanging out with us on a Monday. Yeah, we got Monday Night Football in front of us here. The Jets and the Browns. That's a big one, I guess, if you're into that sort of thing. Not the matchup I'm looking for, but, you know, Odell Beckham Jr., et cetera, and then the hapless Jets. So there you go. Scott, how you doing, buddy? Did you have a pretty good weekend there?
I had an amazing weekend.
Yeah, you did.
Watched the Utes very efficiently win their game.
Oh.
Very impressive.
And, okay.
Yeah, and then, you know, Sunday's a day of rest.
Yeah.
So yeah. A lot of resting.
So you rested while you watched more football. It's perfect. All right. Well, let's jump into it here. We've got a lot to get through. These are our favorite shows. After a big weekend of college football here locally, after the NFL, all these things that are going on right now in our sports world, we're going to bring you right now the thing that's at the top of our mind on the 705 Cut. Let's do it.
The Cut at 705. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
When I think about this weekend, of course, BYU with the big overtime win was
huge win.
Huge for BYU. Utah with a handily beating the Idaho State Bengals efficiently, as you put it, Scott. I think when I looked up at one point, Tyler Huntley was 4 for 4 for 162 yards and 2 touchdowns. Not bad for 4 passes in the game. But let's start first with what happened down in Provo and what probably is. Maybe you disagree, Scott, but I think is the signature win for Kalani Sitake in the era of him being the head coach at BYU.
Slovis in the gun. He claps the hands, takes a chest high snap. He will throw quickly, battled up and intercepted. Did they get it? If they got it, it's over. It's over. The Cougars picked it off. And in overtime, they won it.
You're Riley Nelson in the back, putting duct tape around his mouth to not totally ruin the call there for Greg. And you know, pens getting thrown around, papers getting thrown up in the air. And I'll tell you, the stadium was as fun of an atmosphere as BYU has seen in a long time. Boy, have they needed it, Scott, because it's a thing that they haven't had, which is like this fan involvement at these home games for BYU. Even when big names were coming into town, even with Utah coming in for that rivalry game, it was such a dud of a rivalry game on the BYU side.
Yeah, really,
and you had the delay that was in there. No one was in the stadium by the time it was the end of the game.
I just remember, I'm just glad this game was over.
I think a lot of people felt that way.
A lot of hype built up to this. The thing that got me the most about this win, and it was big for BYU, and everyone can make all the excuses they want. Okay, they can say, well, you know, had he not thrown 3 interceptions – thing is BYU made him throw the interceptions.
Right.
And guess what else they did? When they had the opportunity to make the interceptions, they made them. Like, they got turnovers in that game, and that's huge. That's what you do against good football teams. I'm just really impressed with how winning at Tennessee, I really believe it's one of those things that's like it's a turning point. It's in your mind. You go, how good are we really? And to beat a Power 5 team, to beat an SEC team at home in one of the premier environments in all of college football.
And we looked at that like it was, well, they got the win in double overtime.
Tennessee's terrible. And Tennessee's bad. All these things.
And they didn't look good for those quarters.
No, they didn't. But when that
was very different this
when
week.
When that last throw against Zach Wilson In the regulation where he hit Micah Simon. Micah Simon. I'm going to say Micah Tafua. He's a different player on a different,
on a different team.
Micah Simon down the side. And he couldn't make that catch either, by the way. Micah Simon down the sideline. What a huge – I mean, it was just – it was like things changed for Zach Wilson in an instant.
Does that really make a –
it like, makes a huge
because
difference.
Tennessee, everybody knows that it was a very different team. They're not a USC. But playing at their place and not playing very well for four quarters and then kind of just barely getting to overtime and then winning in overtime, can you suddenly be a better football team after an experience like
that? You can because you can see to yourself, okay, we know how to win now. I'm just telling you, it's to actually do it. I remember the moment when I got to play in the NFL and I go, oh, I belong here. It changed everything for me because then it's like, yeah, I belong here. And then you go, and I can win here, and I can succeed here. And I think for a young quarterback like Zach Wilson, as much confidence as he exudes, there still has to be some confidence that
right,
needs
sure.
to be accomplished. And winning that game and then coming back again and doing it against USC at home, it's huge for him. It's huge for this team. That you get a sense that they certainly believe in themselves now. Now the real test for BYU is how do you answer this after you've now had a bit of success? And how does that play over? Because Washington, they don't care. They're going to come right. and play tough, and everything you did in the past does not matter. How can you get yourself ready to do this all over again this next week?
And this is the Pac-12 champion, you know, Washington Huskies. I don't care what you say about whether or not they're any better. I mean, that they're a worse team than they were a couple of years, or than they were last year and the year before.
They're beatable, though.
And that's the thing is that a lot of people look and they go, well, but why not? I mean, they've opened up as 6-point underdogs to Washington at home this weekend. But again, you're in your environment. Jacob Eason has not been out of his home environment yet this season. Yep. And one of those times at home, he lost to Cal already and made some big mistakes and had a bad day that day. So can they force a guy like that to have the type of day that Keaton Slovis did? Now,
Washington hasn't played a good team yet.
They really haven't.
Cal
and like
not...
I said, haven't left home yet.
No.
And that's a big deal. So here's my question then for you, Scott. USC loses to the Cougars this past weekend. They have the Utes this Friday. Very convenient for our talk's sake, right? But would you have preferred is this the worst case scenario? Why is this the worst case scenario?
It's very simple.
Because I think I think Utah watched film, you know, yesterday and today, and they're just licking their chops and going, if BYU's defense gets 3 picks against Keaton Slovis, we're going to have 6.
You know, no. That's not how. That's
how
not,
does it? Well, okay.
They don't look at it that way.
No, but they look at it like they could get this guy, right?
No, they look at it like, ugh, we don't need a team to be any more motivated than they already are. When teams are embarrassed, when they have a loss like that, there's this great amount of energy and effort into we have to bounce back. Think of Zach Wilson going into the Tennessee game. It played terrible. We got to figure out how do we bounce back from this? How do we find a way to win? And there, for whatever reason, human nature, I don't know, but teams after they've lost just have a greater sense or willingness to focus on those little things to make sure that they're ready to play and that they have a great game. When we win, we get complacent. It's harder. It's so much harder to win after you've been winning. And when you have a young freshman quarterback, you want him overconfident. You want him to think that he's arrived. You want him to think that, man, I'm invincible in this moment, because that's when you have him. Because he'll get complacent in his practice habits, in his preparation for the game. Now, so you don't want to see that if you're Utah. You don't want – look, I believe Utah's a better team than USC. I believe Utah could not – I could not have scripted better – for how things played out.
But Clay Helton isn't just fighting for his job now. It's like he's beyond. You lose to BYU, and you were 2-0, and now you're out of the top 25, and now you're playing Utah at home. He's looking at it like he's already kind of packing some things in boxes, going, if I don't figure this out.
That's the good part of this, actually, for Utah.
Why?
Because the amount of pressure that was on him before the season was like level 10.
Right.
Right.
And now it's 100.
And now losing to BYU, like, beyond unacceptable. It's unacceptable if you're USC. It just, there's no way you get over that. So every missed pass, every penalty, every score by the other team, it exacerbates the whole situation for. I mean, it makes it just like it is like, you know how they have this red level of fire danger. You
know, it's this, like, is the extreme. Yeah, that one where the arrow goes all the way past.
It's like a purple. Yeah, it's so
the sign breaks because the arrow is so far over.
Any little spark will literally ignite this massive fire at USC. I mean, he could potentially not end the season.
Let's take our first break here right now. When we come back, we've got a couple of quotes to hear from Kalani Sitake and Kyle Whittingham, both having their press conferences today. Hear from both of them. We're going to talk a little bit more about what this BYU team has done. What do we know after week two? Because we think, or after week three, we think we know everything, right? After a couple of weeks into the season, we'll tell you what you really do know about these Utes and about these Cougars. More to go. It's KSL's Unrivaled right here on KSL News Radio. Stay with us. Oh, my. How things change in the snap of your fingers or the snap of your ankle. Trevor Siemian, the backup quarterback for the New York Jets. I mean, I'm no doctor, but Scott and I saw the replay, and that ankle did not look healthy after a roughing the passer on Myles Garrett of the Cleveland Browns. He rolled up on Trevor Siemian. That ankle popped. And now into the game, because we're like, oh, my heavens, who are they putting in with this third-string quarterback? Because, as you know, Aaron Donald is out indefinitely with mono. Trevor Siemian looks like something's broken on that ankle. Into the game, former Logan High School great Luke Falk.
Via Washington State
and the Pirate. Any way we can work Mike Leach into the conversation, we're going to do it.
Well, and Le'Veon Bell's now carried for about 40 yards here.
On the first three.
Luke's doing good. He's handing the ball off.
Yeah, Luke Falk handing that ball off to Le'Veon Bell.
It's interesting because you have Greg Williams, who was the coordinator for the defense in Cleveland.
Who
taught those players how to play. We just play hard.
We just play hard, man.
Yeah, and now,
that's it.
And now one of his former players injures the quarterback on the team that he's now coaching.
Yeah, as a defensive coordinator.
Yes.
So
we just play hard. You know,
kind of comes back to bite him a little bit.
Yes.
Boy, nasty play.
Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Nasty play. But Luke Falk, I like it. Getting in the game, playing in the Monday Night Football under the lights. It's great stuff. All right. That was not a name I thought we would hear tonight, is Luke Falk. I don't think the Jets were thinking they were going to hear his name tonight either. They were hoping they weren't going to.
So there's two former Washington State quarterbacks starting in
there
the
NFL. There
you go.
Because, via injuries to other quarterbacks. Yes. All right. Let's go back to this Utah and BYU weekend. The Aggies were off this last weekend, and they play San Diego State, I think, this weekend. They're
That'd
off
be a good game.
They're off but with BYU, of course, winning in overtime against USC, Utah taking care of business against Idaho State. What do we know about these teams so far? Here's Kalani Sitake today in his press conference addressing the media after that big win on Saturday.
Regardless of the outcome, there's opportunities for us to improve and get better every week, and I feel like just like a lot of teams in the country are getting, they're getting better every week, and I felt like we're following that trend. And so as long as we can keep getting better every week, and we have to play better just because it's more opportunities for us to learn and get better. So that's what we're focused on right now as a group. And
everyone says that. I know Zach Wilson said that after the game.
I know.
Look, these guys are as high as a kite that they just won this football game.
No, but I love
it
because
they're just like, man, this is so awesome. This is amazing.
I love it because
I know how everyone thinks, Alex.
They partied on Saturday, and then they do this whole, we're back to business on Monday. Yeah. It's like you're out of your minds with how well the program's doing. And you should just ride that energy into this game.
But you have to get refocused. You really do. And you can't rest on what happened in the past. I get the answer. I just have to believe that this growth of this team, this growth of Kalani Sitake, weathering these storms, and I think the storms are really what make you resilient and what lead you through these other moments so you can continue to succeed, are how well you handle the challenging times. And Kalani's had challenging times as a coach, and he's been able to weather. I just can't get over a moment after the BYU-Utah game when I'm sitting in a broadcast booth at 2 o'clock in the morning. Okay, it's 2 o'clock
right.
in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
And I look to the booth next to me, and there's Kalani Sitake sitting there answering questions.
Sure.
And I'm just like, and I know he has to do it, but I just that really stuck with me. And as I've watched these last couple of weeks unfold, and you see his excitement, which I love. I love that he just, you know, when he's on the sideline and they win the game, you can just see that he's like, man, I can appreciate this so much because of all that I have to do. Get through. I really appreciate that he can appreciate the wins that they've had.
Here's what I know about BYU so far, and that is that Kalani Sitake is the best commercial for his team and his program right now. There was a moment in the game that happened that was kind of forgotten because of how the game ended and where it was. So BYU is going for on 4th-and-1 inside USC's 15. They're going for it. And USC gets caught off guard a little bit. They do this heavy set they ran against Utah last year. Remember where they run on the field? It looks like they're bringing out their field goal team. USC sees it and freaks out and calls timeout. But they bring the heavy set back out again. They run the play but they run it so quickly. Honestly, there weren't enough cameras to see the angle as to where Diane Gwumwoloku ended up running the ball to, or where that spot was on the play. And the referees kind of missed it, and they kind of the ball. It looked like a poor spot. And Kalani's going nuts. I mean, he's throwing stuff, and he's got the get back coach who's pushing everybody back. But Kalani's having to get pulled back. And he's going nuts. He's calling timeout, and he's throwing stuff. And he's this close to getting a flag. And he knew how close he was to getting a flag. Right. And what happened? The crowd starts going nuts. Kalani is exploding on the sideline. And they just love his passion. And so they get – and guess what? BYU missed. They end up short of the 4th-and-1, and they don't get it. And almost no – and it was like people kind of just moved on because they were like, love this guy, man. I just love the way he fights for his team. And they don't get it. It ended up being, you know, a key play because they could have had that 3 points, you know, maybe go for the field goal there with Jake Oldroyd. But it was this thing where after the game, it was the best case scenario for BYU because the play gets reviewed. Now, all the fans come on the field. They tell everybody to get off the field. Now, we look over each other at the booth and we're like, you look up on the screen, you knew it was a pick.
Right.
So we're seeing the replay right in front of our faces as the ABC cameras picked it up, and it was a pick, and we knew how it was going to end. So you get these two things of Kalani coming on the field, throwing the headset, everybody's exploding, everybody's excited. They come on the field, then they have to kick everybody back off again. And then I go, it's going to be great because they'll have a second celebration now of saying so they did, and it was this thing, and I thought, what a great PR moment for BYU. Here's what I know about BYU. They got better from week 2 to week 3 considerably. Their game plan, the play calling, which we wondered about from Jeff Grimes, and I still am not 100% sold necessarily on, because there were some times where I thought, man, he's not particularly creative here. They're doing the same kind of jet sweep stuff every once in a while. We're looking at each other in the booth for the jet sweeps, and we want to die. We're like, why is the jet sweep still being run? But there were times, too, where there were flashes of, hey, he's kind of figuring this out here. Zach Wilson's kind of figuring this out here. What do you know about Utah after week two? So, let me play this Coach Whittingham thing, because he's talking specifically about the USC struggles, and he doesn't want to hear about USC struggles, you know, during his press conference. Here's Coach Witt today.
I guess everyone's entitled to a bad decade or a bad century. So this game, fortunately, in our opinion, has nothing to do with the past 100-plus years. I mean, it's its own entity. It's a new challenge. It's, you know, history hasn't been good to us in that place, but we don't feel it has any bearing on this year.
And I believe of all years, I really don't think the team feels that way either. This team, like you mentioned, BYU, they got better from week 1 to week 2 to week 3. The game against Idaho State, if you were to script a game and go, this is how I want this game to absolutely go, it went exactly that way. I mean, the defense was stifling. The offense was explosive. They didn't just rely, you know, it's like Zach Moss got 100 yards like in the first half, and it's like he's done. Tyler Huntley, they got the ball to more people. I mean, you saw some explosive plays from the tight end. Brent Keithy had an amazing long touchdown. Brian Thompson has started to emerge as a legitimate threat as a wide receiver, and he could be one of those legitimate playmaking wide receivers that you see in the Pac-12. And you see this is a big kid who has a lot of speed. Tyler Huntley has been amazingly efficient this year. I mean, one of the most efficient, effective quarterbacks in all of college football. And statistically, he's had an impressive year. The defense in the secondary, actually, Julian Blackman did not play and the secondary made a tremendous stride forward. The complexity of some of the coverages that they do and mixing things up started to unfold, which will help them, and it'll help them against USC. I just get a sense from a team that's very well rested, who's executed very well so far. They're in a great place. And the other thing that's been really impressive to me are these two coordinators, Morgan Scally and Andy Ludwig. They have just made some incredible adjustments and incredible game plans. It's truly been an impressive non-conference schedule for Utah. They're ready to play USC.
Let's take a break here. We got news, traffic, and weather right now. When we come back, update on the Monday Night Football score. Also, when we return, more to talk about. We're taking your text 57500. What do you know about BYU after 3 weeks? What do you know about the Utes after 3 weeks? We'll take those texts when we return. Jeremiah Jensen from KSL 5 Television going to join us. Stay with us. It's KSL News Radio.
KSL's unrivaled. The teams you live for. The sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome on in. It's KSL's unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Thanks for being with us. So many things to talk about after a big weekend in college football. The NFL, of course, yesterday, and Monday Night Football right now. 13-3. Luke Falk, step up to the plate. Former Logan High School product. Now handing the ball off to Le'Veon Bell this half for the New York
He's
Jets.
He's done good handing it off.
He's done very well. Throws have been a little bit wonky, but you know what? He hasn't had to throw it very far. But Trevor Siemian went down with what we could only perceive looked like a broken ankle. I mean, it was popped.
The Jets are probably going to trade for Taysom Hill now.
Oh, hold on. I've got his mic on this time. I don't know what's going on with whether or not why it wouldn't be on. I don't know. How is it not? How is it not? It says that it's going. I don't know what to do here.
Did I break it?
No. Yeah, you did. You're like not coming in. You can't hear him, right? Guest two.
Is it on? Can you hear me now?
Oh, there I am. Go. There you go. All right.
That's
so
a terrible way to start a segment. I'm sorry.
3, 2, 1. That's what you guys do on TV, right?
Yes, we do.
3, 2. So, but Trevor Siemian's ankle is broken, right? That's what it looks like.
He walked off the field. How did he do that?
I don't know, but we watched the replay.
It didn't look good.
Miles Garrett put the full weight of Miles Garrett on that ankle, it looked broken.
Something's wrong.
Either way, Luke Falk, former Wazoo guy, former Logan high school
I remember
guy.
Covering him in high school, and That's now funny. To see him on Monday Night Football, it's a little surreal. So good for him.
Yeah. So, Jeremiah, over the weekend, we asked people to text in what they know now about BYU and Utah. What do you know about BYU? What do you know about Utah after week three?
What I know about BYU is they're very resilient. Two overtime games, and they pulled out overtime wins against – look, I don't think Tennessee's very good. I'm not sold on USC being that good of a team either. I don't care.
I hope not.
We'll see. We'll see on Friday. I don't care who the opponent was. They play these big-name teams – and they were resilient, and they found a way to win these games. So I know that BYU is resilient, and I think that's something that I don't know that they win these games the last 2 years. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's a progression with the program to be able to win these kind of games. Now for Utah,
you know, just really quick on that. When we were down there doing our show at BYU, we did Unrivaled there.
Yeah.
And we
down at
we,
fall camp
at
yeah.
fall camp. We commented on there just seems to be a different feeling here. A different atmosphere. So I don't know what it is. If it's the maturity of the coach, the players, whatever it is, I agree with you that there's a new grit and resilience that's there. And it's noticeable.
Scott, did you do that on purpose? You're not supposed to say grit about a BYU team after Bronco leaves. Only he was the one to bring true grit to BYU. Okay, so after week two.
Sorry about the miscue on protocol.
No, it's fine.
I'll get back to spirit,
at some point,
honor,
BYU,
and
BYU
tradition.
Some BYU fans took that as an offensive. I can't believe you just called them gritty.
Well, what do you want me to call
no,
them?
No, I know. But it's true.
They are gritty.
Yeah, that's true. Like,
so they're gritty, and they're a physical team, too. I'll add that. I was really impressed with the play in the trenches. The Cougars won the last two games at the line of scrimmage,
right.
And then they got enough from their skilled players and their quarterback to make plays late to win.
What'd you get out of the Utes?
Utes are just all business. It's business as usual. Nothing crazy. I mean, they didn't blow up the scoreboard against any of these teams. Looking back on the BYU game, they didn't do anything wild and crazy, but they just controlled the game throughout. They did the same things in the last two games. And I don't think we've really seen everything that Utah has to offer, but I think that's just part of their approach right now. They're all business, is the best way I can describe what I've seen so far from them. This Friday game, I can't wait to see them actually just let it all go. You know, the playbook, the intensity, everything right. For a conference game. Everything changes for Utah's season Friday night. It's a different season for them.
It's their biggest divisional opponent.
This is Utah's season.
Yeah.
Agreed.
It really
yeah.
is. It's like we talked before the season, what's the biggest game? And it's you don't win the South, you're not going to win the Pac-12 unless you beat USC. It just never happens. So
right. And they might not even be the best. USC. They might not even be the quote-unquote best team right. in the South.
Doesn't
or
matter.
Maybe they end up struggling. You have to beat those guys.
Yes.
The road goes through them. You can say, well, your Arizona States or whomever's are going to end up looking a little bit better. Don't care. USC is always going to be that power that everybody's going to look at and say, yeah, but they have the talent. They have the name. They are the class of the Pac-12 South always until proven otherwise. And so that's the deal, that Utah has a chance to really show up, blow them up at their place, which they could really do.
And they've never done, by the way.
And they've never done down there. And so it's an interesting thing for the fan base to kind of get a feel as to what this Utes team really is about. Now, we had this discussion before the show, and I want to say this too, and I think that watching Twitter blow up with, yeah, but BYU, hey, this is Ute fan talking, hey, BYU, that USC team was barely ranked, and they gifted you those three interceptions. That was the clarion call from the troll Ute fan. The troll BYU fan was, oh, now if we played Utah, now we would have a chance against the Utes. So that was the clarion call of the blue-goggled BYU fan this weekend. And both are wrong, and I will add this in the nicest way possible. Both are not very smart either, because it behooves BYU for the Utes to win out. It behooves the Utes for BYU to do as well as possible, because as good as you can look is how well – look at BYU's loss to the number 10 ranked Utes. That looks pretty good. If it's the number 4 ranked Utes at the end of the year, looks even better, because you don't want – you should be cheering for – and I know you don't want to hear this, BYU fan, because you won't do it. And Utah fan, you pretend like BYU doesn't exist and stop it. You get on Twitter and you talk about them. So stop that. But – you want both of these teams. Both need to watch the other team. They want them to. They should be cheering for them.
Are you the fan police?
Oh, you feel the same way, you little dirtbag. You know this. You know it's not smart. You should be cheering for both teams along the way.
Of course,
here.
It's smart. Yeah,
but being a fan and being smart don't always go together.
Well, they never go together.
They never.
I mean, that's
go
not
together.
Even how it ever is.
That's kind of the definition of a fan, right?
Right.
You're supposed to be. There's rational thought doesn't enter the picture when you're a fan.
I just know that when
that's not fun.
When I get on fans, it's just not a good thing. I've just had experience with it, and it's just let the fans say what they want and be what they want, because I just had bad experiences. I just leave it at that.
Scott's been burned by the fans before. Yeah. So, Jeremiah, going into this week, BYU, Washington at home, Utah, USC on the road, these are critical turning points for both of these teams this season, because you're at a place now, you're kind of playing with house money for BYU, because a lot of people didn't even think you'd get to the two wins after the four games against these two teams. And then with the Utes, their season's on the line going down to the Coliseum.
So, yeah, I'll start with BYU. Beating Washington, beating three Power 5 teams in a row would say so much about the growth of the program. What it would tell me is their depth is finally getting to where it needs to be, because you need depth to be able to win these kind of games and to play this kind of schedule. To get three wins like that in a row, I don't care how good Tennessee or USC is. They've got big-time athletes at both of those schools. And then we all know who Washington is, and we know what Washington did to BYU last year. To turn around and beat them this year would show tremendous growth for the BYU program. For Utah, this is our first chance to see how good this team really is. And I want to see them go down there and just take USC to the woodshed. I think they can. You saw what BYU did against USC on the line of scrimmage. You saw what Kyrus Tonga did to their offensive line.
Right.
So Leki Fotu can't do that.
Right. Bradley and I can't get around the edge on some of these cats. Yeah.
And you look at Stanford, right, who USC handled quite well, and watch them go to UCF and not play you know, well
get blown
at all.
Out again.
Stanford isn't Stanford this year.
Whoa.
We've learned that so far. That I did learn
right.
so far this
year. So now, but
I'll tell you what excites me about you. I can't get over this. Brian Thompson just really seems the wide receiver. He's wearing number 19. Doesn't mean anything. But
oh, is this the guy you sent your letter to?
Yes.
Oh, it's your inspirational preseason letter from one former Ute 19 to the current one.
I wasn't going to bring that up. I'm just saying, I don't think Utah's had one of these like elite level wide receivers in the Pac-12. And this guy he's bigger. He's like some of those better Pac-12 receivers, but he's got great speed, and he's a guy who's really stood out to me.
And he's just getting started.
And he's just,
Jeremiah, what's going on Sports Beat
Pac-12 athletes
tonight?
They have now. On Sports Beat, we're going to hear from the Utes. You're going to hear from the Cougars. You're going to hear from the Aggies. Got a big one against San Diego State
this
weekend. Open play, and then we'll show you how Luke Falk does on Monday Night Football.
Ah, the old Monday Night Football. That's halftime now, and it's 16-3. The Browns are up on the Jets. JJ, thanks for hanging out,
man. You got it.
JJ tweeted out this weekend, been a rough couple of weeks for the BYU, should go back to the Mountain West crowd.
Oh, man.
That was my favorite tweet.
I knew I was
going
to get a lot of stuff in my mentions, and I just sat back and I watched it.
I loved it.
But it's true.
JJ knows how to tweet, man. We're going to be back. More to go. Join him on KSL 5 tonight at 10 o'clock. Right around the corner, our MVP. Stay with us.
.com.
Welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery and Scott Mitchell. Thanks for being with us on a Monday evening. Yeah, Monday Night Football. Look, it's not the best of matchups when you talk about the Jets and the Browns. But you know, OBJ brings a little bit of that interesting kind of storyline. So does Baker Mayfield. People want to see how the Browns do in year two under Baker Mayfield, and they want to see with OBJ in town how that happens. They're up right now, 16-3 at the half. And, man.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Browns are the most hated team in the NFL.
Most hated?
By people in the inside.
We don't like them. Mostly, I
wouldn't be surprised.
They seem
overrated.
I don't
think people say, they'll just go, what have you done? Who are you?
The Browns, man.
You all act like I wouldn't be surprised.
You're the Browns,
if people feel that. You see what happened Tennessee last week, and player says, oh. We'll see how you guys
OBJ
play.
Rolled up with another $200,000 watch, different color this week. It's clear. So he was hoping they wouldn't see it. The NFL wouldn't see it.
Is it clear plastic and rubber?
It really is. It's like invisible.
I just have
clear.
Richard
Mill.
Can I just tell people you are fools if you buy a watch like that? Serious, come on.
Well, he didn't buy this one, right?
No, I'm not.
They got all
the
publicity in the world.
I'm not talking about him. I'm just talking about anyone.
Don't
in
buy
general.
It. Why? Yeah, $300,000 watch? Come on.
No.
All right.
Buy a Timex for
$300. It glows in the dark. Okay, I can see it at night when I have to go to the bathroom.
Classic Casio that you get at Walmart.
That's the calculator watch.
Yeah.
I begged for a calculator watch when I was a kid. I got it too, and I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to be able to get through all the math tests on this.
I am the worst person in the world on watches.
I am too. I
watches
lose them.
And sunglasses. It's
I lose
not
them.
I lose them. Break them.
Break them. Lose them. Yeah. All right. Kicking off the next part of the show, you know what we do this time? This time of the evenings, we gather together and we figure out who are the people who won the day for us or won the weekend. Considering it's a Monday, it's our Unrivaled MVPs. Let's do it.
The Unrivaled MVP. Scott and Alex crowned tonight's most valuable player.
According to Alex.
Uh-huh.
According to Scott. Most valuable player.
All right. Settle down. So, you know, over the weekend is a lot of, like, you see a lot of these, passionate stories about this and that. And I just love the – I basically look for MVPs constantly now because I see stuff happen and I go, ooh, I got to send that to myself. Let's start off, though. Let's do a couple things here. We have – you want to do the first one, Scott, or you want me to do the first one?
I'll do the first
one. Okay, you go ahead, buddy.
All right, so my MVP tonight is Tennessee Titans – offensive lineman David Quisenberry, who catches his first touchdown, which isn't a big deal other than he's an offensive lineman.
Oh, now the old tackle eligible.
But it's not that he was an offensive lineman that actually even made it a big deal. He's an offensive lineman that in 2014 he was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and has battled a really, really long battle with cancer. It was a long, hard fight. And in fact, when he actually was cancer free, they ring a bell, right?
Right.
He literally rung the bell,
and
so
he broke
hard,
it.
Rung it right off the wall.
I love it. I just imagine him like squeezing it, squeezing it hard, and yeah, the bell just closes.
And he's an offensive lineman; they do that kind of thing.
I was glad the ball was thrown a little behind him. He went back and got it.
And so
favorite thing is after the play when the Colts, the defense, they go over and talk to each other and they go, why didn't you pick up that number 72? Like, why didn't you pick up the 6'6", 320-pound guy? You know, it's like, come on. You're not expecting that guy to catch the ball. But what a cool story.
Yeah, it's a great story. So he was with Houston and actually was on their practice squad. And, of course, the coach, Mike Vrabel, was with the Texans at the time. And so he knew and saw this battle. Started out on the practice squad and was actually elevated to the 53-man roster in 2017. So not only has he battled to get cancer-free, he's battled to get himself actually on the field. So congratulations to David Quisenberry,
awesome,
as MVP of the day.
I thought you were going to give it to the fire crew who put out that massive pregame fire at the Colt. Did you see that? I'm actually watching the video again because during the Titans game, they had the pyrotechnics crew. So imagine those, you know, tall rectangular black boxes they bring out onto the field that have, like, you know, some fireworks as the players come out. Look at the fire. I'm showing Scott this for the first time. Imagine one of those getting sideways and basically shooting up and catching the grass on fire.
Burn down the sidelines.
The business benches, is burning like down the sidelines.
All the equipment. Yeah,
look, they got in there quick. The first fire extinguisher lasted for about 2 seconds. Didn't work out, but they were able to put this thing out relatively quickly after.
I'm surprised that more of that doesn't.
I mean,
they have all the pyrotechnics.
Yes,
go
they have
on.
So much fire. They have so yeah. many. They have so many things that they do. I mean, so we're at the stadium.
I mean, think about you're in a stadium. You're in an enclosed area. You're in a seat. It's not like you could go anywhere. And if something just goes just a little awry, like it doesn't go up, it goes out.
Well, this one was shooting
one
toward
over,
the crowd.
Right, yeah.
You can see the first few rows of the Titans pregame that is just that you see all the fans had to move up because you could definitely when you're up on like the let's say the 30th row on the 50-yard line and they're firing those things those big flames up from the end zone, you feel the heat immediately.
Right.
So imagine that thing. The flame was huge, but the fire crew was able to put it out. So there you go. And then Quisenberry catches a touchdown. So there you go. It's a win-win for everybody. Nobody got hurt with the pyrotechnics fire. I'm always wondering about this, and I know that they have to plan this beforehand, but like BYU did this the other day, and I'm sure Utah probably did it too. They shoot fireworks off, you know, during the game, and you go.
They shot them off before even the team got on the field.
That was BYU did too. And
yeah,
I remember thinking,
kind of weird.
It's 1:30.
Yeah.
My son goes, I can't see him. I go, well, that's the way it is, man. Can't see the fireworks. Sorry, buddy. All right. My MVP goes to Virginia's Tony Bennett. Not the singer Tony Bennett, the head basketball coach Tony Bennett.
Of the national champion.
National champions.
Virginia Cavaliers.
Last year they go out in the first round as the first seed. This year they win the national championship, rejects a $500,000 raise, and is actually donating it to the Career Development Center for current and former Cavaliers players.
Wow.
So essentially just turns down the $500,000 raise and puts it right into and says, put it into the development for these players who are, you know, most of them don't end up going to the NBA, but
that's
they
awesome.
Still need to go in and have careers. And so, Tony Bennett, you're our MVP tonight. We'll be back. Hour number two of KSL's Unrivaled. Stay with us.
KSL's Unrivaled. The teams you live for. The sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Carey on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome on in. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Carey, Scott Mitchell. Thanks for being with us here in the studio on a Monday. Scott, what a weekend. This is when we love our jobs, when there's so much going on. And it really does. It helps a lot when, and you said it to Jeremiah kind of as a, I think when he was walking out of the studio, it just makes a difference when the local teams are winning. And I know that there's I'm convinced that it's a smaller group of people, Scott, than we think. The ones who really don't want the other teams to win any games the rest of the year. I'm not in that camp. In my mind, if you're a BYU fan, you should be a huge Utah fan. And if you're a Utah fan, you should hope BYU wins out the rest of the way because all the teams you leave in your wake is just part of resume building. And the best they can do looks good for you along the way. Let's talk about how this affects the rankings here in our 8:05 cut.
The cut at 8:05. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
You look at last week. Yeah, okay, it's great. But look at this week. And it's not just Utah. It's not just BYU. It's also Utah State.
Right.
I mean, you have Utah, who's ranked 10th in the country, playing at USC. You have BYU at home, who's now won two Power 5 games in a row, playing another Power 5 team.
In a ranked Washington team.
Then you have Utah State, who's now playing a really good San Diego State team.
So they're in the Mountain West play now.
In the Mountain West play. And this is a comment that I made over and over and over again, is rising tides lift all ships. So when all of these teams are playing well, playing good opponents, it only bodes well for everyone. If you're a fan of football in the state of Utah, you have to be excited now. You get a sense that this season is just unfolding in a way that this could be really special for everyone, everybody. And we all should really appreciate what's happening here. I've lived in places in this country where there's a lot of good football, and it doesn't just have to be either or. It can be and all of us. And it just makes it better for everyone. So really exciting week last week, but even a more exciting as far as the opportunity. Now, whether everyone wins, different story, but at least the opportunity. I mean, BYU is going to be on national TV. Utah is going to be on national TV.
Let me ask you this.
So it's really exciting.
Because right now, if you look at, so Scott loves this stuff. ESPN's got a computer.
I don't care about ESPN. I think they should just kick ESPN off of the airwaves.
So ESPN has a robot, and it's much like the Roomba at your house. It just goes around and it just cleans up. And in this case, their computer does all the work for you on which teams are going to be going to the college football playoff. Okay, this is according to their playoff predictor. All right. Here's the percentage chance.
You know,
of
what you
teams
said
going.
Right there is what is wrong with college football.
A bunch of computers
it's
getting together.
Computers or people in
or
a room.
Millennials.
Why,
man.
Why can't you just put? Why can't you just go here? We're going to play all these teams, and we're
going
to have.
They
a
are.
System.
They're going
no, they
to.
Don't.
Okay,
they
so
do not.
Let's just look at this.
So stupid.
Okay. I just love what I love watching you get worked up about it. The chances of making the college football playoff. Here are the percentages. Clemson 78% chance. Alabama
'cause they play in a sucky conference. Seriously.
Oh, wow.
Overrated.
Wow, that's Broncos conference. Shut your mouth.
Well,
how dare you?
He has
Here come
no,
the Cavs.
He has no grit.
Here come the Hoos. So Clemson 78% chance. Alabama 75% chance.
Blah 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 blah.
Ohio State 43% chance. Notre Dame 39% chance.
Overrated.
Georgia 39% chance. Oklahoma, 36% chance. LSU, a 33% chance. By the way, I've named off three teams from the SEC already.
Right. So how does that happen? It's so dumb.
Wisconsin, with a 12% chance.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Now, here's my favorite. Out of the AAC, your UCF Knights at 9%. Over the only Pac-12 team on this list.
With a percent, at least a percent.
But they have 8.
I know, but I'm saying Utah doesn't even have a percent.
This is
less than 1%.
Yeah, so Oregon is on the board at 8% of them going to the college football playoff.
This is
behind UCF, behind Wisconsin, behind three SEC teams, and Notre Dame. So there you go.
It doesn't even make sense.
I love it.
It doesn't make sense.
I love
and it. Not only does it not make sense, but it's like, seriously, how can you not, whatever.
But
call
this
me
is
a homer.
But see,
I don't care. How okay. in the world can
but
you
this
not?
This goes back.
Can you not put Utah? Can you cannot
it's too early.
Put?
It's They're too number, early. I love how they are literally the number 10 team in the country. 10 teams are on this list, and Utah is not one of them to make the college football playoff. Now, why is that? Because they're going to be the first ones to lose along the way, and they'll lose to Oregon. And what this is saying is they'll lose to Oregon in the Pac-12 championship.
What they'll
game.
Say is Oregon and Utah will have losses, and they'll play each other, and they'll lose to Oregon.
Right.
Yeah, and they'll end up.
And then they'll end up 11
in the Foster Farms Bowl.
Oh, that's a nice one. The Cheez-It Bowl?
It's not.
The Cheez-It Bowl is a nice one.
It's not. I'm just telling you. This will be.
Is the Sun Bowl still affiliated with the Pac-12?
Yeah, they just
it's fun to play in El Paso. You can go across the border, get your family some nice switchblades for Christmas.
You go to the Sun Bowl where the sun isn't shining. In fact, you can take your bowl and you can stick it where the sun isn't shining. That's what you can do. How about that? How about that? ESPN and your robots.
Hey, listen.
No, and they have their power rankings out. Utah's like 22 in their power. They're 22 in the power rankings. Who are you kidding?
This is great. But this goes back.
Why is this great? Why?
Here's why
am I,
it's great. Because
why do
you're
I
so
feel like I'm
it?
The only person in the room that this matters to?
It's just I'm laughing because. But this is the thing I'm telling. This goes back to.
I hate college football.
This goes back to the. This goes back to you wanting BYU Utah fans. You should be praying that BYU does well the rest of the year because that knocks up this percentage. Maybe a bad. It's a bad terminology there, but. This puts the percentage further up, okay? How do I say that? Okay, so it puts you further up the line there, all right? Your percentage goes up. And then the other thing is that for BYU fans out there who think that you would beat Utah right now, you're dead wrong, so stop talking like that. And cheer for the Utes the rest of the way. You know why?
So
it just makes you look better. When one of your losses –
it's not make you look better. It is very much better for
them. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Let's say they do end up getting a W against Washington this week, and they're 3-1. They'll be in the top 25. You know why?
I know.
A lot of that is going to be based on the fact that you will likely be because on your list is the only loss you have is to it'll be a single digit Utah ranked team.
So if you're Utah and you get to the end of the season and you're trying to get in the college playoffs and they're looking at your non-conference impressive wins, and you play and you beat a BYU team, and that same BYU team goes on and has a great year.
Right,
that works in your favor. On the other side of it, if you're a BYU team, and who knows where you end up at the end of the season, and maybe you end up in a situation where you don't have to go to the Hawaii Bowl. Maybe there's a different bowl, and you go, what were your marquee wins, Well, the only loss or one of the few losses we had on the year was to a Utah team who played wherever.
Maybe they lose to Boise State, and then it's a loss to a ranked Boise State team and a highly ranked Utah team.
So,
and those are your two losses on the year.
So here's the crazy thing.
All that does is it does so much more for you.
So this is the crazy thing that you're saying. And you brought this up earlier. I had not thought of this, by the way, Alex, until
you brought
it up.
Very rare that you don't think about it.
It's true. Actually, Utah and BYU should cheer for each other.
Yeah. Big time.
Like, big time. Yeah, I mean, that's a crazy thought. Because you know what? They don't.
No, they won't.
They really don't. They sit there and everyone's trying to justify now where they are as it relates to BYU and Utah, depending on what your fan base is. And it's silly. And everyone actually should go out and cheer for each other.
So my whole thing on that is not because I'm like, hey, let's all come together and cheer on one another. It makes everybody – look, what good does it do for BYU to have Utah lose the rest of the way? It makes
BYU look bad.
All people did was talk about how bad Wisconsin was after they lost to them last year.
Yes.
Or after they beat them last year.
Yes.
All people are talking about now is, yeah, but that USC team. The worst argument I saw all weekend on Twitter was a total Ute fan troll who went – you beat a barely ranked USC team. And I remember thinking to myself, what does that mean, be barely ranked? Like – that's like saying, "Oh, she's barely pregnant." Which one? What do you mean, barely ranked? If they were a ranked team when they came in, and you know what? It's USC. Mitch Harper, our BYU insider, after the game, brilliant tweet. First tweet he sends out is, "How many star athletes are on USC's team?" BYU has 6 4-star athletes on their team, 0 5-stars. USC has 6 4-stars for BYU. USC has 41. 4-stars and 9 5-stars.
Nine five stars.
That's right. And all he put was development, player development, and coaching really matters. And I thought that's perfect because that's what you need to know. That's what you're getting with this team. Better coaching. And this is what Kyle Whittingham has done his entire time up at Utah. Taken smaller amounts of stars and made them brilliant. So you just got it. Look, Utah fans, just cheer for BYU.
And BYU fans, cheer for Utah.
Come on. It makes you both look better. It's better for everybody. All right? Taking the break. We got more to go here. When we return, what were we laughing about earlier, Scott?
We'll talk about it later.
I can't remember. No, what was I laughing at you about? Oh, the robots. Get these robots out of here. Don't let these robots make my rankings up for me. We're going to take another break. When we come back, speaking of trolls on Twitter, I got called a troll just because I asked one simple question about Taysom Hill.
Well, you kind of look like a troll.
Despite my hairy face, I can be a troll sometimes. But this was not in effect to be a troll. Taysom Hill, we're going to play a true or false quiz for Taysom Hill next. It is KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio. Welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. One day, KSL will allow us to, like, get the conversations off the air into your world.
One day, it'll be the last day.
They're just as interesting. And we have sports conversations off the air that are, I think, just as insightful. And half the time, I mean, they might be a little bit more edgy. That's all.
Yeah.
We don't look. It's not like Scott's clean as a whistle. He's not going to start cussing up a storm in here. And maybe we do. We should just, you know what? Just do the full thing. Yeah,
there are discussions with a little truth serum.
Yes. And you know what? We need to bring those back. It's college football season. We might as well bring back the truth serum in a minute here. Speaking of the truth serum, we've got a true or false quiz that we want you to take here. Now, over the weekend, the New Orleans Saints lose their starting quarterback and the leading passing yards, all-time career leader in yards thrown in the NFL, Drew Brees. He goes out with a bad thumb injury after he collided with Aaron Donald. And Scott drew it up for us and said, that's a bad one. You're throwing as hard as you can, and that hand's coming forward at 55 miles an hour, and it hits a lineman's hand.
And it stops immediately.
Yeah, that thumb getting torn up like that is bad news. And so that's what ended up happening is this guy, you know, Drew Brees is out. And he's going to be out between 6 and 8 weeks. And Teddy Bridgewater came in, and he did not do well. And the Saints lost this game against the Los Angeles Rams. And it was not a good look for the Saints. Because without Drew Brees, they do not look very good. But it started this discussion about where is Taysom Hill?
And yeah, before you get into that, let me just comment really quick. Teddy Bridgewater does not get reps in practice.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you. When everybody second string guy needs to come in and step up, then. But how much during the week is he actually getting on a regular week where they don't assume that Drew Brees is going to be going out? How many reps is he getting in practice with the team?
You have two days of really hard practice, Wednesday, Thursday. And you have different segments in practice. So you have a 7-on-7, which is a passing drill.
Right.
Everyone but the lineman. There's probably 18 reps in that whole period. Maybe 15 to 20, somewhere around 18.
But they're all throwing.
They're all throws. 100% are throws. The starting quarterback, if it's in my era or if it's me, the backup might get two.
Of those 18
reps a day.
And the two reps you weren't doing to be you were doing it because you're like,
I just need a drink of water.
Let me get my arm a rest here for a
second. Or you know what the play is because it's scripted.
Right.
And you go, yeah, go ahead and throw this one. I don't care about this one. In the team period where it's everyone and it's a mix of run and pass, probably the same ratio. And the backup's going to get the rep that's probably a run. Because you don't need a lot of practice handing the ball off.
Sure.
So you want to see defenses. You want to be able to read and throw and get timing on the throwing routes. That's really what is the most critical. And you don't ever give those reps up. So
then let me ask you how many reps then that Taysom Hill's getting as the third-string quarterback since, by the way, there are like four teams in the league that have a third-string quarterback.
So how does the backup quarterback get reps? Well, they do all that. They're the scout team quarterback. Right. So they give the look to the other team. So Teddy Bridgewater basically looks at a card from the other team's plays, and he's running another offense. It's not your offense.
Right.
Taysom Hill doesn't even look at a card. He doesn't even get a rep at quarterback ever.
So I get somebody.
He gets reps at wide receiver.
Okay, so let's do a true or false.
Or they do the little, yeah.
I've got the true or false game for you.
All right, here's the true.
I'm going to make you. I'm going to make you play it because you're the guy who actually played in the NFL.
Oh. Okay.
Fine. You want to ask me the questions? I'll give you the true or false. Okay.
And then I'll tell you if you're right or wrong.
Scott, there is true or false. There is a team in the NFL that would actually take Taysom Hill as their starter right now.
I'm going to say true.
Who is it?
A team. Well, you need another week.
Well, it's the Jets tonight for sure.
Yeah, I mean, but it could be a team like that. Maybe
right.
You lost the guy for the year. I mean, Sam Darnold's going to come back. When? I don't know. It's so weird.
He and his junior high girlfriend get over mono.
Yeah, his injury's like super cryptic. It's just it's a strange thing. We do not even understand at all what that is.
Right.
I'm just telling you, it's something way
no, I know.
Way more nefarious and bad
we
than we
is.
Know.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Mono.
Mono.
I've never
That's
heard
great.
That. Whatever.
Okay,
it's a team like that.
Because
true.
I had somebody hit me up on Twitter, and they said Taysom Hill would start on half of the teams in the NFL.
No, he wouldn't. NFL. He wouldn't start. No.
He'd be the
not
backup for some other teams?
No, it's a team that's like looking for a rebuilding situation, and they go – the reason I say it's a possibility is because Taysom Hill is a guy if you – to let him – just throw him in there and let him see where he can go with
okay.
things
true.
On a team that's not going to make the playoffs.
True. But see, that's the thing. So, okay, true or false then? Taysom Hill should be starting over Teddy Bridgewater.
False.
Why?
Because of where the Saints are right now. If now the Saints could be the perfect place for him because he knows the system. If the Saints were out of the playoff picture, so they've brought Teddy Bridgewater in to say for this very reason that we need a guy who can play and play right now. We don't need a guy that we can develop. So we've got to have a guy. Taysom Hill's a project. Taysom Hill's a guy that needs seasoning. He needs developing. We can't afford that development if we're in the playoff hunt. So we got to have a guy that supposedly – now, Teddy Bridgewater doesn't play well. This team gets out of the playoffs. Taysom Hill could be in there for a long time.
True or false, Taysom Hill is better utilized in his multipurpose role than he is as a possible starting quarterback.
Right now, that's true. Yeah, there's
why doesn't they have to be qualified? In my mind, I'm like this. This is a guy.
Okay.
I said it on Twitter and I got blown up for it.
The NFL is right now, so it's true. They don't care about down the road. They really don't.
Right.
Development is something that happens in the offseason. That's just not what's going to happen. Or teams that aren't playing well. Taysom Hill is awesome in his role. I mean, what he's doing for this team is incredible as a special teams guy, but also as a legitimate weapon offensively. And it's not just – I mean, they've recognized there's so many different things that they can do with him. It makes it really challenging to actually zero in on what he is. And so those critical third and short situations become very tangible and much more manageable for the New Orleans Saints.
True or false, Taysom Hill will be used less in this role as taking a lot more – taking passes – taking these end arounds because
false.
He is basically the backup.
False.
So they're going to still use him in that fashion.
You plan for each week. You don't plan for. It's like if Teddy Bridgewater gets hurt, then we'll just. Do, I mean, they can effectively function in his role now in Taysom
right.
Hill, whatever he's doing now. I mean, because there's a lot of things they potentially could do with him more than maybe what they could with Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater. Throwing the ball down the field, reading defense is going to be a better option than Taysom Hill right now, but there's you can do enough with Taysom Hill. So it's false. His role will stay how it is. It won't change in the near future.
See, and my thing is this: and I got killed on Twitter this weekend when I just said, look, he's better as this multi-purpose guy than he is. As something else.
That's very true.
I don't think that he's
the only way you want him in there right now is if you're a team that's looking to develop someone and not make the playoffs. You have to win. The NFL isn't
and
about,
the Saints are and the Saints are looking. They're going. Hey, look, if we split these six games without Drew Brees, we're still
in
the playoffs.
Right.
Right. Because
yeah.
Then they come in and they're 4-4, and then Drew Brees goes over that stretch of the next eight games to win six out of those, and then you're suddenly a 10-6 team.
Owners don't sit there and go, "Yeah, we want you to develop things over." They don't
go
look,
win right now.
It's like win. We're not hearing about this development. This it has nothing to do with any of it.
True or false? Odell Beckham Jr. just ran for 91 yards for a touchdown. He was a reception, but yeah.
I'll say it's true.
Sorry, 89 yards.
89. Oh,
sorry,
it's false.
Nothing. False.
Which one?
False.
Is it 89 or 90?
False. All right, we're going to take the break here as the as OBJ just scores an 89-yard touchdown reception for the Cleveland Browns as we speak here. We're going to take the break. News, traffic, and weather here at the bottom of the hour. We'll come back. We got our two-minute drill. Speaking of NFL topics, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the things that happened in the league, shaping the storylines across the NFL, and our two-minute drill. The Pac-12 actually admits to wrongdoing in some refereeing. Does it matter? No. But they said sorry. We'll be right back. More to go after news, traffic, and weather right here on KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio.
Scott Mitchell and Alex Carey on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome on in. Thanks for being with us. It's KSL's Unrivaled. I'm Alex Carey. He is Scott Mitchell, former NFL quarterback, former Ute quarterback, also does the analyst job for the Utah Utes during the football season. That means you're very busy these days, Scott.
I'm very analytical, Alex, yes, of course.
It's a good kind of busy.
It's an awesome thing. Love it. Really excited about what's going to happen throughout the next couple of months here. The Pac-12 schedule started. Utah's now ranked in the top 10. So, yeah, it's an exciting time.
Hold on. Let's do true confession, though.
Blah, 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 blah. I don't want to hear it.
I want to do true confession right now because you and I talked. This is what I love about working with Scott is that he doesn't – one, he's watching the same game. I mean, Utah gets done with their game and BYU get done with their game roughly around the same time.
Right.
I think the Utes ended up actually kind of finishing a little bit earlier, not just because of the overtime, because the game just went quicker. I mean, it just did, you know, when it's a blowout like that. But Scott calls me after and goes, hey, man, I'm calling the Utah game – but I'm watching part of that BYU game,
sure,
too.
So we had the video on, of course.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, it was interesting to you guys. What was the reaction like for people who were watching USC lose to Utah? When you're like people who were in the stadium at Utah, what their reactions like when something
I honestly
happens?
Don't know what it was. I mean, because I'm really isolated from the fans.
I know, but I mean, like, but like, what did Bill think about it? What did you think
no,
about it?
No, it's certainly a situation, you know, we've certainly talked through this, but where I don't care how talented your team is. Anytime you start a true freshman quarterback, it's
going to take a minute, right?
You don't ever know.
Yeah.
And this was such a perfect example of that, where it's like, wow, USC is now 24 in the country. And this guy was coached by Kurt Warner, and he had, you know, he kind of comes out of nowhere, but you know, he really beat these guys and in the battle to be the backup, and he's a true freshman, and all he wanted to do was go to USC, and he looks like a world beater, and then he comes to Provo, and he looks like a freshman, you know. it's not that he was bad; it's that BYU forced him to be bad.
Right?
They gave him a look. He was in a situation he'd never been in.
Maybe there is something about playing on the road too, right?
Like, yeah, your first, that's what I'm saying. All of that, you know, and you're going to have good and you're going to have bad with freshman quarterbacks, and you just try to manage one, your expectation. But you know, so did it shock me that BYU won? No, really didn't. I mean, when it happened, when JT Daniels went down, all of a sudden you go, you know what? Now JT Daniels is there. I would be extremely shocked if BYU would have won that game. For as far as athletes and what, you know,
mistakes that somebody's going to make, all
right,
that.
But I'm just saying on paper, I would envision that USC is a better team than BYU.
Right. Anyway, I wanted people to know that you were still watching the BYU game while you were still calling the Utah game.
Yeah.
Because you're a guy who's interested in the folks that are around here. You know, it's our job.
Yeah.
It's our job, man.
We want everyone to cheer for everyone.
Yes.
Now it's extremely important,
and that we talked about that at the beginning of the show, and if you missed any of that discussion, you can go back, download the Unrivaled podcast, find it anywhere podcasts are. It's totally free. You can listen to it while you mow your lawn or while you're doing your knitting like Scott does. So here's what we're gonna do.
Don't knock knitting.
I want to get to the NFL side of things, and we were talking about Taysom Hill last segment. and I want to go kind of a bigger picture in the NFL. So you have the biggest storylines. You think about Drew Brees going down and going to be out for a considerable amount of time. Who knows what's going to end up with that. The Dolphins, is this the worst you've seen a team start? Because we've seen blowouts in the NFL, and they don't happen that often. But when they happen to the magnitude that you've gotten 2 weeks in a row from the Dolphins, to lose 59-10 last week, to lose 43-0 this week to Tom Brady's Patriots at their place, I don't know. I mean, you just don't see that type of start from any team in the NFL.
Do you know what's the sad part about this?
This is one of your former teams.
Well, that, but here's the sad part.
What?
If you're in business and you're showing this kind of business. You're out of business.
Right. Business is not good.
But if you're in the NFL, it doesn't matter.
You can still make money.
You're going to make a lot of money. Your value, like the value of a franchise, through the roof. And it doesn't diminish even if the team is bad. In fact, the team in South Florida, the Miami Dolphins, that's a team that has some name recognition, right? So it's not, you know, it's not like the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's not even like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's the foundational franchise in Florida. The Miami Dolphins has cachet. But if you're terrible, it's actually you're going to make more money. I mean, everyone wants to get out of Miami, which is really sad. I can't understand. You know, that may be a generational thing. It's like, yeah, if it's not working,
I want to, yeah, give me
just,
a new job.
I just
want
out. I want to go somewhere else. Yeah, yeah. Just, you know, in fact, I don't even want to play anymore.
Hold on. Are you speaking Scott Mitchell for saying it's a millennial problem?
I'm just saying this generation.
Generational. Okay.
Alex, I don't even know what this generation is. Apparently, we're out of the millennial generation.
Yeah,
we're into some Z or who knows.
You don't have any more letters to describe it.
I know. We're at Z. It's the end. There's no more letters. It's nothing. This is the end of any generation.
But do you look at the Dolphins and you go, this might be the worst team ever and they'll fix it?
Of course it's the worst team ever. And I just don't understand how you can get so bad. You can get so bad because there's ways to fix things in relatively short order. The design of the draft, the ability of free agency, it's clearly this organization is just an absolute train wreck for this to get this bad. Most teams, Alex, are competitive.
Right.
And when they're not competitive anymore, it's because their stars just got old and they haven't been able to retool their team yet. But this Dolphins team just they basically I don't know what tools they're getting, but they're certainly not ones that work.
Speaking of teams where it's not working, the Giants are 0-2 and Eli Manning went one touchdown, two interceptions yesterday on 26 or 45 passing. And everybody is doing the whole, okay, the Giants are 0-2 in their first two games of the year. You've got to give a shot to your kid, to your rookie that you brought in the draft, and you've got to make sure that this kid out of Duke comes in and you give him a shot. At what point does Eli Manning go out for Daniel Jones? If you're in an organization where this is a guy who's won two Super Bowl MVPs, and certainly he's not his old form, but it's still, I would take an Eli Manning over Daniel Jones all day.
Look, 0-2 is not the kiss of death.
When do you put him in?
A lot of teams have come back from 0-2 and gone to the playoffs. Teams have won Super Bowls that have started 0-2. That doesn't matter. When do you put him in? When you're 0-3. 0-3.
So you get one more week.
Essentially, their one loss. And even like if they win this week and lose the next, like 1-3, the odds of winning are just stifling how challenging it is to win and to make the playoffs at 0-3. It just doesn't. It very rarely happens. So 0-3, and at that point, you're like, look, we're not going to make the playoffs. Highly unlikely we're going to make the playoffs. So we need to build for the future, and the best way to do that right now is to get Daniel Jones real-time playing reps, playing against NFL defenses on Sundays in the regular season, and there's not a better way to learn than through that. And quite frankly, Eli being around, and you know Eli's going to be a good guy, he's going to mentor and tutor this guy at that point. He's just not. Eli's not going to go in the corner and sulk. And everyone's going to understand this is the direction of how things are. This is where this is what we become. And we're a team building. Otherwise, you stay with Eli for the year. You don't get anything out of the year, right? You don't go to the playoffs. And now, let's say next year you go with Daniel Jones. Now you got to go through this whole thing in another year.
Sure.
Why wait a year to do it? So he'll be in soon.
Staying on our NFL theme here, of course, as we're getting some of the things out of here. Because we know everything after week two. That's the way it is. Overreaction is out
of know everything until week four.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Is that we overreact after week one. And then after week two, we really think we know everything. We're like, oh, no, now we know what's going on. The Cowboys are 2-0, but they've beaten the Giants and the Redskins. What do you tell your
They
Cowboys?
Look good. Right. They look good against bad teams.
Sure. Okay, and that's the thing.
So how good really are they? That's a question mark.
That's a question. What about the Patriots? Possible to go 16-0. It's the
same.
The limit.
Here's the crazy thing. It's the same thing, okay?
They've beaten two bad teams.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Steelers aren't really that good. Oof. And if you remember a year ago when the Patriots weren't winning, like they were struggling, like, oh, but Tom Brady, this is the end of Tom Brady. I'm just telling you, don't read too much into 0-2 and 2-0. Don't read into 1-1. Read into 4-0. Read into 1-3. Then you start seeing the trend.
All right. We're going to take the break here.
So we just got to wait a little bit longer.
We'll take the break here, and we're going to come back. We got our two-minute drill on the way back here. There'll be some NFL themes still in there. There'll be some college themes in there, too. Pac-12 officials, they say they're sorry for blowing calls over the weekend. Does it matter at this point? Are you okay to hear you're sorry after these things when a referee says, hey, we blew that call? Hopefully that makes you feel better. Stay with us. More to go. It's KSL's Unrivaled.
Met someone.
All right, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for joining us. If you've never really joined us before, we hope that you will again. KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell over there. Alex Keery right here. And we've got all the bases covered across the world of sports locally, across the country here. We've been having a lot to talk about. These Mondays are the worst, Scott, because
Worst. Well, I love Mondays.
I know they're the best and the worst because we don't have enough show to talk about all the things.
Let's go 4 hours on Monday.
You want to do 4 hours?
Let's do four.
See, that's where I draw the line. Can't do the four. I'm not going to do the 4 hours.
Let's do a marathon of Unrivaled on Monday.
There's just so much to get through. So this is a perfect time, too, because it's a Monday edition of our very special moment where we get to all powwow together. Scott, explain to the people what the two-minute drill is at the end of the program.
Well, I'd love to. So it's not where you start. It's always where you finish. And in a game, you have to finish the game strong by going down the field and kicking a field goal or scoring a touchdown to win it. Most games in the NFL are decided by 3 points or less.
Wow.
Didn't know that. Yes.
Didn't know that.
And if you miss the field goal, of course.
Or 43 points or less if you're the Patriots. Yeah.
Well, if you're the Dolphins. Yeah. I got nothing for the Dolphins. Anyways, in our show, we got to finish strong, too. So we got a lot to talk about. Not a lot of time to talk about it. So we talk a little bit about a lot of things.
Wow.
Unless we get onto a subject that we really like, and then we just kind of ramble and go down a rabbit hole.
Yep.
And we may just talk about one thing. And that's usually when we lose the game.
Or I get cut.
Don't screw up, Alex, or you're going to get cut.
All right, listen. So USC, of course, the game that's going to be played on Friday is going to be nationally televised. Everyone's going to be really excited about that one. Fox is going to be playing the game. And their Fox pregame show, first timer for them, they have this new pregame show, their college football pregame. On the show is Matt Leinart, former USC quarterback.
Yes.
Lefty. Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah.
Also, Urban Meyer, everybody's favorite
former Utah coach.
Head coach. And also, for the first time that we know of, for the first time since being at USC and since losing his Heisman Trophy.
Can I share an observation with you, Alex?
Yes.
Okay, look at the media market in this country. Do you know how many former USC players are in the media?
Right, tons. Yes.
A million.
No, and so
billion.
Add to the list Reggie Bush, who is going to be for the first time back at the Coliseum.
Right. Do you understand why he's together with
he's
Matt Leinart?
No. He's in L.A.
No.
Because they played together.
No.
Because everybody loves him.
No. They
because
are there.
Of the controversy.
Their whole mission is Urban Meyer.
Oh.
Their whole mission's Urban Meyer.
So, no,
this is
hold
all.
On.
This is all
guy,
an audition.
This is a guy who's a little bit of persona non grata Reggie Bush at USC. He had
No.
He had the he brought shame to the program.
No.
They don't like him there anymore.
No.
He had the Heisman Trophy ripped away from him. They had to vacate wins.
No.
So you're saying that Pete Carroll, Matt Leinart, and Reggie Bush, when they show up in L.A., they're still mad. Everybody loves them still.
Of course they do. Are you kidding? What I'm saying is this whole thing, this organization of having Urban Meyer and these two former Trojans on a show together, you know how much time they spend together?
Well, so that,
do you know how many? Do you know how much conversation they have? Coach?
Hours and hours.
USC is the most amazing place in the world. We need you.
You know what? I've heard he's not going to be the head coach. They might want him for the AD job.
No.
Only head coach if you're Urban Meyer.
Urban Meyer cannot get out of his own way. He cannot. I'm just telling you. When he left Ohio State, what did we say on our show?
He's
going to go to USC. Yeah. I'm telling you, he's going to go. It's the only place. It's the only place he could possibly go.
But what about your guy, Jack Del Rio, getting the job and being the head coach and Urban Meyer being the AD? Because that's a pretty sexy pick right there.
Now, Urban Meyer's not an AD.
He's not the type. He wants that spotlight.
Look, if they're gonna do a nationwide search for an AD, it's not going to be Urban Meyer. It's not.
He wants that spotlight.
Can I just tell you? And I hate to say this, but I'm just telling you, it will be true. If Urban Meyer goes to USC, it will become a national power again.
Oh, yeah.
In a short period of time.
Like the next year.
Yes.
As soon as he goes there, he's going to be the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're going to be
winning. And you know what they're going to do? They will give him the world.
How much do you pay a guy like that? $10 million a
year? $10
million
a year.
Yeah. That's a college coach.
No,
it's
Urban Meyer.
That's true. But that's what Gruden makes. And Gruden is this overpaid, you know, head coach of the NFL.
I'd pay more for Gruden.
I would too.
Seriously.
I like that guy.
He's underpaid.
He's a good guy. He's my friend. Let me see here. Oh, Fox, we were talking about that and how they're having that pregame halftime. I'm going to tune in because I'm all for that. So we're going to be watching that one, and you'll, of course,
I'll be busy.
There. Yeah, you'll be down there. That'll be a fun one to watch. But I want to see what their interaction's like to test your theory. By the way, the Pac-12, I got an email over the weekend. Maybe you got the same email.
Yeah.
But the Pac-12, their PR team sent me an email that said the Pac-12 and their officiating crew at the Arizona State-Michigan State game up there in East Lansing, they admitted missing a call on that last field goal attempt that Michigan State had, a leaping penalty that would have been called against Arizona State that would have not only given an extra shot at the field goal, but would have moved it up 15 more yards for that
almost field goal. Chip shot field goal.
Yeah, so it would have been, it would have turned from a 42-yarder into this 27-yarder, and they were this would have been a huge game changer. Likely goes to overtime after that. But
do you know
what is the point of, don't even say you missed
exactly
the call.
Do you know how like disingenuous and how flat it lands on you?
It's like when the NFL officials admitted we missed that call in the NFC championship game, sorry.
They did. When I played, they gave you a list every Monday and said, here's all the calls we missed in your game. And it's like, great, how about you miss a paycheck? Or how about we dock you on your paycheck for every call that you missed in the game?
What do you think?
I know in the NFL they grade officials, and you can literally grade yourself out of a job. It's actually happened before. But the good officials end up in the playoffs, and officiating for the most part is pretty good. But people's livelihoods are on the line by some of these calls. And it's okay if you get it right, but if you keep missing these calls and then you lose, and it changes fortunes, it changes dynasties, it changes lives when these things happen. I don't want to make it sound over dramatic, but it's true. I mean, when you do this as a profession, you put so much of yourself into it, and to have someone just come back after the fact and go, gosh, I blew that call. It's all you do. You're an official. That's it. You don't have to do anything else. Open your freaking eyes and
look at the play. Look, but the quarterback throws maybe a couple picks during the game.
Well,
he still gets paid for it.
He's eventually going to be out of there. You don't last long if you don't play well.
My heavens. All right, speaking of not playing well, we got to end the show this evening. We got to be done for the night. So we'll be back again tomorrow. We've got more to talk about. We'll be bringing you all week more of our breakdown. Tomorrow you're going to hear some of our conversation with Clay Helton, the head football coach at USC, for how long we don't know. But our conversation we had with him about Utah about coaching at USC at Pac-12 Media Days when we that we attended during the summer. So our conversation with Clay Helton, you'll be able to hear that tomorrow right here on KSL's Unrivaled. For Scott, for Amber pushing all the buttons, for my friend Jeremy, our producer, I'm Alex Keery. We'll see you tomorrow night, everybody.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.